racing in the Australian Cup. Shillelagh from Ace High. Avilius has a fight. It's just on the outside. Shillelagh and Harlem. Shillelagh, Harlem. Stride for stride. Harlem's going to win it again. Harlem's beaten Shillelagh in a photo. Graf moving up to Sunlight at the clock tower. Sunlight kicks from Graf, followed by Brave Smash in her time. Santa Ana Lane. Still Sunlight with 100 metres to go from Graf. Brave Smash. Osborne Ball's late. It's too late. Sunlight won the Newmarket.
The Autumn Sun. Boy, you'll have to be good to win from there. It's Fundamentalist in front. From Vega Days, Nikita Jane. The Autumn Sun is lifting late. Fundamentalist in front. The Autumn Sun's really surging. The outside. Yes. Oh, what a super win. The Autumn Sun got up.
It's Hawkshot grabbed by Mystic Journey. Followed by Amphitrite. Ring-a-ding-ding late. Mystic Journey with 100 to go. Races away. They're roaring in Tasmania. And Mystic Journey won the guineas easily.
This is RSN 927's Racing Pulse, the heartbeat of Victorian racing. Here's Michael Felgate.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Pulse on Monday the 18th of March. What a weekend it was and what a fairy tale result it was for the inaugural running of the $5 million All-Star Mile. Australian racing has its next superstar. And this morning we're going to make it a Mystic Journey morning. We're going to kick things off with her trainer Adam Trinder. We'll then have a chat to her owner Wayne Roser and also the man who bred her, Ralph Zito. And then watched her go through the sale ring for just $11,000. Let's relive that magic moment at Flemington on Saturday when Mystic Journey wrote her name into the record books as the first winner of the All-Star Mile.
At the 300, Lura Main Hawkshot grabbed by Elise and Mystic Journey. Elise on the outside, Mystic Journey a neck away, and Lura Main's going with them, a grandstand finish. Mystic Journey over the top takes the lead. She is what dreams are made of. Mystic Journey's won the All-Star Mile, a length and a quarter. Photo second, Hartnell Elise.
There's no doubt she is what dreams are made of, and for Adam Trinder, what another stellar moment. Not long after winning his first Group 1 in the Australian Guineas, he has won a $5 million race, and the win was even more awe-inspiring. Adam Trinder joins us now. Morning, Adam. You've had a day or two to let it settle in. Can you still believe what your bonny little filly has been able to achieve?
No, not really, Michael. We keep raising the bar, and she keeps well and truly clearing it. She's back home now in a usual environment, pulled up really well. But to look at her at home, she's only a little black uncomplicated filly, but she's just got heart and demeanour. She just keeps galloping.
Well, she displayed that in spades on Saturday. Three wide, no cover, up against the best horses we've got outside of Winx to put her to, and she ran away from him the last 100. What was going through your mind during the race?
So I was a little bit concerned that she was... We knew she'd be in the three wide line from her barrier there. We were just hopeful that it'd be three wide and we'd be able to get cover when she was three wide without cover, having to do all the work and carve them up. I said to Dharma they weren't making a lot of winning ground on the day. I said, make sure she's there to present on the corner so she hasn't got too big a task, which he was able to achieve. But just through the run that she had in transit, why she looked really comfortable, I thought, well, the long Flemington straight just may take its toll the last 100. But she was fantastic. She just kept galloping, and she was as strong as anything on the line, and even a furlong past the post, nothing had still got past her. So I think they had their opportunity.
That was the most amazing part, her strength at the finish, how she actually was racing away from the likes of Elise Le Romaine, who are bona fide Group 1 gallopers, and yet this was just her 13th start. How much more improvement, how much better can she get, do you think?
So it's going to be really interesting to see. She improves every time we race her, and she races in better company every time we race her as well. So if we were keeping her in the same grade, we'd probably see a bigger improvement once again, because the assignments have got harder each time, but the wins have become better. So she's only a baby. She's only 3.5. And as I've always stated, I feel she's on an upward spiral. We haven't seen the base of her or anywhere near it as yet. So we'll protect her and see as to where she can end up. She's taking the right progression.
I know you've always had huge confidence in her, but did you think going back a month even that she would be able to do that to the likes of Hartnell and Elise?
Knew it'd be really tough, or felt that it would be really tough. I've got utmost respect for for the majority of the field that she raced against there Saturday. But Harper was a favourite of mine from an outside and external view. I just love him as a horse. I think he's won over all distance ranges, won in different continents, and he's a genuine Group 1 performer that's earned exceptional prize money. So I stated before the race, weight for age condition, she got him really well at the weight scale with only 54 kilos on her back, but I thought she'd need to as well, racing bona fide tough, hard season Group 1 horses. But to see her go there and do it, we had a little bit of expectation heading into the Australian Guineas, obviously, but whilst this didn't have Group 1 status, I thought it was another step up in class once again, and we continue to challenge her, obviously, but she thrives on it. She just keeps coming to the plate.
You've had good horses in the past, but when did you realise that you had a potential Group 1 galloper?
Probably not realistically until the spring of last year. She won the list of Jim Maloney there, and I thought she was fantastic, but I didn't think that she was ready for a Group 1 assignment, so we just raised the bar, but just kept her a grade below and ran her in the Group 2 there on Cox Plate Day, and once again, she was fantastic there. And off the back of that, I thought she'll win a Group 1 this filly. I'd be disappointed if she didn't. Didn't really know where that Group 1 would be. We mapped out a program for her for this preparation with the Australian Guineas, our first major assignment. But we had a backup plan there. Should she not have been able to step up to Group 1 company in the autumn in Melbourne, that we'd take her to Adelaide for the Oaks and try and get a Group 1 through that means. But by gee, she really stacked up and... Yeah, forward and onward. If she can maintain a form, she's definitely deserved of a place in a Cox Plate. But as I said, I think she's just going to present a little bit more seasoned and a little bit more improved in the spring of this year.
Well, Mooney Valley's been a happy hunting ground for you and your family. You won the Cox Plate of jumps racing, the Hiskins there, like your dad as well. But what does winning a $5 million race do for you?
So haven't really sat down and thought about that as yet. Probably the same as most of our winning percentages. Most of it will go back into the business, improve infrastructure. Our business is our life. I don't treat it as a job by any means. It's a lifestyle for Leah and I. We love the training, and we're always diversifying and improving, buying treadmills and the like, or building new stables. So most of it will be absorbed back into the business, I would suggest.
You're on the map Australia-wide now. Everyone knows in the racing game who Adam Trinder is. Could you become too big for Tassie? I know you love Tassie. You're a staunch Tasmanian, but could there be a possibility that you want to expand your business and move to the mainland?
So there's probably a possibility moving forward that we will dip our toe into the water and just set up a satellite stable once we've gathered together enough horses to make it sustainable. I've got a nice team of horses here in Tasmania, but probably realistically, as it stands, only three or four genuine Saturday grade horses in Melbourne. So I'd like to bring a team of probably 10 consistents together, so that we can probably initially start off with half a dozen there full time, and then see as to where it grows. Obviously, if we head down in that direction and it works out successfully, there will be interest come from the mainland clients, so it could potentially build itself. But I would suggest it's probably 6 months away in the planning.
What were the celebrations like on Saturday night?
Reasonably tame. They were just starting to ramp up a little bit, and I snuck out the back door at about 10:30. I'd had a big few days and had to be up early to Philly the next day. So had a nice meal and a couple of quiet celebratory drinks. But I was quite happy to get a little bit of a rest. The pressure was off.
And what about the family response? Your grandfather was involved with Piping Lane, a Melbourne Cup winner. Your father Michael, a great trainer in his own right, especially in the world of jumps racing. And he hasn't been in the best of health in recent times. How was he with the win on Saturday?
So it really gave him a pick-me-up, I felt. I was speaking with him directly after the race, or 5 minutes after the race, over the phone, obviously, and he was terribly excited and terribly proud. He's only been out of hospital for a week. He had cancer surgery there. He had cancer of the bladder, so they removed his bladder and he was in intensive care. But he's in really good spirits. I went round and saw him Thursday before we left for Melbourne, and he was out and about watering the lawn. So he's
he's in good spirits and in good form, so he should improve, but this has gave him a really big lift.
Oh, that is good to hear. And on a wider scale, what do you think this does for Tassie Racing? I saw Scotty Brunton, who's jumped on the bandwagon. Hell of a streak, ran out of his skin at the moment. Seems to be a real resurgence in the quality of horses in Tasmania. How much do you think Mystic Journey will help put Tassie Racing back on the map and maybe increase the funding and the quality of racing in the state?
So I believe that she's gained a lot of interest, and I hope the latter comes to fruition, as you said, sort of the government get behind it. We don't have a point of consumption tax down here, so we're in the same boat as Adelaide in regards to gaining revenue for racing. So hopefully this has brought racing back onto the government's radar in regards to a positive light, but she's definitely brought the people back to the races, or the interest in the races there from the public. I feel at times the Tasmanian community struggles to connect with racing down here and probably doesn't receive the same exposure as what it does in the mainland states. But this little filly's been in the paper every day for the last month. There's always been something on the news bulletins, and everybody's really connected to her. Dave Manchandon, who does all our media work. She's obviously got her own social media accounts, Mystic Journey, and every time he puts something up, the people just love it. They bounce on it. She gets 5,000 views for any little video snippet that comes up. So yeah, they're really connecting with her, and she's a good news story, and people are taking the positives out of it.
Well, she's a great news story for racing in general, not just in Tasmania as well. And the other great story is Anthony Darmanin, who he would never have thought he'd be riding a Group 1 winner, let alone a winner of a $5 million race. And for you as the trainer, and Wayne, who is the owner that we'll speak to shortly, I suppose there might have been some pressure to stick with Anthony when you would have had some of the best jockeys in Australia ringing up saying, I should be the one to make sure she can win these big races, but you've stuck fat.
Oh, exactly right. Anthony's our stable rider and has been ever since I started training. He rode all of my big winners here locally. He's won other metropolitan races for me in Melbourne there. So the opportunity remained with him. He'd done nothing wrong and continued to do nothing wrong. So we're very loyal. But that being said, if it's not broken, don't try and fix it. So he hadn't done anything to suggest that we need to even contemplate looking outside the square.
Do you think she's the second best horse in Australia?
So for the little black filly that I bought at the yearling sales here 2 years ago, you always reflect back to where they come from, and sort of I'd probably undersell her to a certain extent. So my initial reaction would be no, but what she does race day, it's got to get you thinking. No matter what she races, as I said, every time we race, she improves. But I think if we kept her in the same grade of race for two races in a row, we'd see a much bigger improvement margin-wise than what we've seen through her races. So, yeah, she's very hard to get past, and she's got heart and determination. So she's got to be ranked in the top handful of horses in Australia anyway.
Well, we can't wait to see her back in the spring. Cox Plate, the ultimate aim. Have you got any kind of early campaign mapped out in the back of your mind?
So uncharted territory for me, obviously, but no, I do have to sit down this week and work out a loose assignment list, sort of as to which way we go. But just through a timing perspective, she obviously won on Cox Plate Day there last year, and she kicked a campaign off the back end of July, which would be a little bit early for her this time around, just through race programming. There wouldn't be any races available for her in July. So that's going to be the biggest thing, getting the suitable races for a horse of her rating now, to be able to groom her through. And while she was a fortnight between runs into the All-Star Mile, I've always been of the suggestion she operates best off a three-week minimum. So I'd like to space her racing leading in. But obviously, it does have to fit in with the calendar. So that may be a little bit awkward, but it's a good position to be in.
Well, it certainly is. She is scarily good. 120.5 Greg Carpenter tweeted out yesterday saying the All-Star rated, where the normal Group 1 benchmark is 115. So she's running some incredible figures, and she has in her career so far. And you've handled her beautifully as well. Well done, mate. Enjoy the victory. We look forward to seeing her back in Melbourne in the springtime.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Anyone could have bought her. She cost just $11,000, and that's what the racing fairy tale is all about. The man who is living it is Wayne Roser, the man who paid $11,000 and now has potentially the second best horse in Australia. How are you, Wayne? Congratulations on the win on Saturday.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic.
Can you believe the horse that you've got?
Yes, she showed potential from a two-year-old. I mean, she set a track record when she was second race, actually. So that was an open class record. So she's developed so well. But we've had a lot of slow ones, so it was about our turn to get a good one, actually.
Well, take us through the mindset of the owner. What goes through your mind? What were you thinking when your horse ranges up in a $5 million race?
Well, unfortunately, I don't watch it. I only watch the last little bit because you're so emotionally involved in it and you listen to the broadcast. But as you know, any race is very important. $5 million, well, it's unbelievable figures. But any race, whether it's a maiden or a top-class race, is the same thrill, actually.
So you get that nervous, you don't watch it during... You only tune in the last little bit, do you?
Yeah. It's nerve-wracking, actually, but there's no enjoyment in a race. You just hope, well, you hope they do well, and we know with her she gives 110% all the time, and that they come back well. So that's the crucial thing.
So tell us about your racing journey. How many horses have you had, and how long have you been with Adam Trinder?
Well, I've been with Adam ever since he started, but I've had, probably about 50 or 60 horses over a period of time. And with Adam, we've had up to 18 horses in work. And at the present moment, we just bought another 5, so we've got 15 at the present moment, actually. So, no, we've been... I started with Adam when he first started, and he's been absolutely amazing. Absolute horse, total horseman, and besides a fantastic trainer, one of the nicest people and most genuine persons you'd ever meet.
Absolutely. And what is it about Tasmanian racing that has drawn you to have your horses there?
Well, I was a barrister in Sydney, actually, and I got a serious lung infection. So bought a property down in Tassie, and that's where it's all started. And a guy that was putting in the lawn there was syndicating, and I got in that syndication. And subsequently we got involved with Adam, and then... as you probably know, with syndications, it has its moments, so I prefer to operate by myself. So that's the way I go now.
Well, $11,000, is that the best financial decision you've ever made in your life?
Oh, very much so. Although we had one, we had Valiant Warrior, which he could have been anything, actually. He won at Moonee Valley on the 1st of August 2015, and he only cost a bit over $10,000. And again, he was chosen by Adam's partner, Leah.
Yeah. And is that, she chose Mystic Journey, I believe, as well?
Yes. We go to the sales every year. We sit at the same table. And when they come into the ring, I basically put my hand up and that's how it all goes, actually. But as you know, you're not quite sure what's under the bonnet. So you take chances, but that's gambling. And well, it's ultimate, actually, isn't it?
Well, I saw you in the mounting yard at the presentation on Saturday, and you said, they can talk about winks, they can talk about the autumn sun, but we're not scared of anyone. Now, we may not get to see her take on those two, but do you still have that same sentiment?
Oh, very much so. Yes, it's that's the way I've operated. I operate as a barrister, that irrespective of who you're against or who you're prosecuting or defending, you went in hard and fair, and we don't fear anyone, actually. And that's why it was great that I wanted to have a chat to him when he drew our number out, Giles Selwood.
Yes.
Yeah, when he picked us from the outside, I wanted to have a chat to him about that, but then that was a good draw. But I think she has a lot of attributes that he's got, that you play hard and tough and you don't lie down. You go after it.
There's no doubt about that. Wayne, congratulations. We look forward
thanks,
to
mate.
Seeing you and her back here in the Spring Carnival.
Yeah, well, as I say, we don't fear anyone. I mean, you look at the way she's improved every race. I mean, I know she's got an unbelievable record, 10 out of 13, but she could have been even more than that. I was just unlucky with it through various circumstances. But no, she's just amazing, absolutely amazing. Right. And she just wants to run and win. And you can't train that. You can't. That's just natural ability.
She certainly does. Enjoy it. The rest of the racing world is very envious, but very happy indeed to see such a superstar. Well done.
Well, thanks for having a chat on Saturday, and thanks for all the support. It's a good news story, and we certainly need good news stories in this world.
We certainly do, especially in racing as well. Wayne Rosa, who is the owner of Mystic Journey. Time now to have a chat to Ralph Zito, who actually bred Mystic Journey and ended up selling this superstar for just $11,000. How are you, Ralph?
I'm very good, thank you, Michael.
Congratulations on breeding her, but when you look back on her right now and she's got a bank balance of $3.2 million, you sold her for $11,000. Is there any tinge of pain?
Oh, but of course there is. But let me assure you that being a breeder since 1995 and having bred three generations of this family, obviously I would have loved to have had both, but if given the choice between the two, I'm absolutely 100% confident I would have opted to be the breeder, because I've heard Rick Jamieson say this previously, that the satisfaction is immeasurable. And in fact, it's eternal. It's the fact of actually having bred a Group 1 winner who's the rising star of Australian racing and who looks like she's ready to take the mantle of the greatest racehorse we've had in the country for, well, generations, is really absolutely overwhelming. And I'm completely overwhelmed with joy because it's a confirmation of her pedigree. She's performing exactly as her pedigree demands. There's nothing freakish about. There is freakish ability. She's not a freak. She's performing exactly to her pedigree. And the confirmation of that is that I'm not sure if you mentioned it. If Wayne mentioned it in his discussion, I compliment Wayne because he's the rabbit's foot that made the thing possible. To be honest, I'm not confident that if she'd stayed in any other circumstance, that she would have risen quite as quickly and quite as meteorically as she has. So, look, the bottom line is that I'm overwhelmed, and all the breeders in the country that have been contacting me in the last 2 weeks have made myself and my breeding partners very, very proud and very, very happy people.
Well, it is a good Victorian connection here as well, because you obviously have the Damn White Gold and you're a Victorian breeder. Tell us you decided on the cross and the breeding partnership that has produced Mystic Journey needs further out of White Gold.
Well, look, you know, we actually sent White Gold down to Tasmania because Armadale Stud had a stallion down there called Savoir Vivre. And I noticed he was winning. He had a fabulous pedigree and he was producing two-year-olds, which he wasn't entitled to. And when I looked more deeply at his pedigree, I looked at his dam line in particular. You know, his dam was Oso Sharp, the Triple Crown winning first Group 1 winner of Sheikh Mohammed, and a great, great, great granddaughter of Melindy, who's a full sister to the champion stallion of the world, Nasrallah. And I thought, my goodness, what a pedigree. So I did the mating, because we do 8 generation and 12 generation analyses, and she was perfect for, he was perfect for White Gold, and the outcome was Oso Gold. Now, this is not a coincidence, but Oso Gold has produced, has also been to needs further, as has White Gold. And guess what? There's a horse in Tasmania trained by Adam Trinder. Mystical Pursuit, 4 starts, 4 wins, 2 stakes wins. She's actually 1 race ahead of Mystic Journey. So I think it's just confirmation that, look, appropriate and proper mating of and genetic affinity is the underlying core attribute of success. We've been involved for 25 years. And we've had disproportionate success, and I think using those principles and sticking to them has been the mainstay of the success that we have had.
Well, thanks to you, Ralph. The racing world is certainly going to know a hell of a lot more about White Gold, Needs Further, and the whole Mystic Journey family as well, because, as you said, she is on the verge of becoming the next superstar of Australian racing, and we'll certainly get to know more about yourself as well. I appreciate you taking the time to have a chat today. We'll do it in more detail, too, in months to come, no doubt, because you've got a fascinating background, a pathologist and an olive oil producer, and now also the breeder of one of the best horses in Australia. Congratulations, Ralph.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful, Michael. And let me also add that it's important for Tasmania that people on the mainland realise that if they make their mares appropriately, which we always like to do, there is fantastic genetic material available in Tasmania that they can utilise. I'm a Victorian through and through, and my heart is always in Victoria, but we've got six mares at the moment, and four of them have gone to Victorian Stallions. One's gone, five to Victorian Stallions, and one's gone to New South Wales based on their best matings. And I think that if all small breeders are dependent on that, and it's what gives us our edge over the larger commercial institutions through the country. It's fantastic. Thank you very much.
Well done again. Ralph Zito, the breeder there of Mystic Journey.